Hey everybody, this is Josh McKinney, and I just want to welcome you to the newest episode of the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show. So, we're back for another Q&A. I guess people liked the how to pick up chicks advice, so they decided to share it, and I just noticed that the listens are kind of going up on these Q&A episodes, and for me, I like doing them more. They're a little bit easier for me. If you're watching on video, you can tell that I'm not in my studio right now. And that's not always an option with those longer, more detailed questions. I generally need all my tools. But today, I'm in my wife's office. As you can see, we are just decorated with the background. There's diapers everywhere from a very, very big diaper party. Pro tip, if you are having a baby, I stole this idea from one of my black belts. If you're having a baby and you want to, and your gym lets you and you have some jiu-jitsu skill, maybe you're like a purple belt or above, you can offer to teach a free seminar at your gym. But instead of money, people pay by bringing diapers. And so, for us, I don't know if we will have to, with Matthew, actually purchase any diapers because we did this. And my student Justin that did this, I think he said he went 9 months before they ever had to buy any diapers. Pro tip for you. But today we're going to get into some, honestly, these are some tough questions for me. I'm going to do my best, but we are going to see if I can give you guys good answers on some of these questions. People are like, they're liking the Q&A question or the Q&A episodes, but it almost feels like they're expecting, like me to be smarter than I am. There are some deep questions on this and we will just get into it. We'll see. Like I said, when I answer these questions, this is my perspective and it's my perspective right now. So had you have asked me the same list of questions 3 or 4 years ago, I would have given you different answers. And who knows if those answers are right or more wrong than they're going to be today. But that's the thing about perspective is that's all I can really share. I don't have some book of knowledge. There were not any special techniques or ideas that Grandmaster Elio passed down to me that I know these are law. Anytime you're answering anything, you're just giving your perspective. And so that's what I'm doing today. And I thought a simple one to give my perspective on to start. I always like to start with something easy, something light. A listener asks, why did I ask for my I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show rash guard for Christmas? I got to wait 2 weeks. I suck at jiu-jitsu and at life. Oh man, I feel you. I feel you. I remember. So if you don't get the question, we did this pre-order and I think most everybody's gis and rash guards and shorts are in now. But if you ask for it for Christmas and you have a parent or a significant other that likes to play this game, you don't get to wear your rash guard until Christmas. You don't get to open it until Christmas. You got to have something to open on Christmas morning. And a funny story about that. I remember growing up. And my mom loved to play this game. And I think that she might have played it with more intensity than anybody I've ever met. I remember like the week of Christmas being like, man, I'm really at the bottom of the barrel on this toothpaste. I really am at the bottom of the barrel on, whatever, I wish I'd. Mom stopped going shopping. Why do I have no more Velveeta shells and cheese? Why do I have no more liquid gold? And then wake up Christmas morning. And of course, I would get my great gifts that I would ask for. But she disliked us to be opening a lot of things. And so then I would be opening, Crest Pro Health and Velveeta shells and cheese at 7 years old. And that was my Christmas presents. It's rough, man. It's rough. It's especially if you're impatient. You're just like, you're staring at these gifts and you know what's in those gifts. You know what is in those packages, but you got to play your cards better. You should have said like, hey, could this be a late birthday present? Or I don't know, should have bought it with your own money. Just That's just how it goes. So let's go to our next question. We will maybe continue. We will let the questions get harder as we go. I think this is an easier one. How your strategy changes based upon size of opponent, or does it? So for me, my strategy definitely changes when I'm going with somebody bigger versus somebody smaller. I'm way more likely to play guard and play guard for a while if I am going with somebody that is smaller than me. When I'm going with somebody bigger, I ideally would rather play top. And that's not to say that I always play top when I'm going with somebody bigger, but it's just like, that is my goal, is to be on top. And I just think of that as, you know, like from a gravity standpoint. One, if I'm heavier than somebody, I can lay on them more. And that is, you know, that's great. But the problem is they can also get up very quickly. When somebody's heavier than me, they're going to have a harder time getting up quickly. And so I'm able to actually, and this is why I say use that term, play top or play bottom. I will do jujitsu from wherever. If I can't take a big person down, I'm going to pull guard. I don't have much choice, right? If I can, you know what I mean? Like, so I guess how I'm looking at this is what that means is what is playing guard and what is like playing top. So when I pull guard against a big guy, the first thing that I look at, I don't think about De La Riva, butterfly, half guard, any type of guard. I don't put that tie up into my mind. I don't think of any position that I'm going, okay, I'm going to hold this guy in my guard for the next 3 minutes. I want to be on top as fast as possible. And one thing that, you know, like sometimes you're going to have to play, but what I will do is I will only focus on distance, meaning if you've ever seen any of my videos where I talk about chest over chest, that is just an understanding of distance. That's those two seminars are available at simplifyingjujitsu.com if you want to check them out. They just really give an explanation on what distance is in, you know, when it comes to guard and when it comes to guard passing, when it comes to being able to actually play guard. You cannot play guard if you keep losing the distance, even if you're playing it against a smaller guy. But if you're playing it against a big guy, they're going to crush you. And so what I think about is framing on the shoulders and hips and keeping the guy from getting chest over chest. I keep him at a chest over hips distance or even further than that. And what starts to happen is, especially with big guys, is a lot of times you get them to play on their knees. And the beauty of a guy playing on his knees is he cannot put his weight on you. It is not possible. He cannot put 100% on his weight on you until he gets up to his toes. And so it's just like how our bodies are designed. And so when I am playing in this way, my first thought is distance, and I'm really not playing any particular guard. You're not going to go, oh, Josh is playing butterfly. It should look like, oh, Josh got the guy to get to his knees, and then the attacks start. And the attack is either going to be most likely omoplata, or I used to be totally anti-half guard against big guys, but I really, really do like the John Wayne sweep, even for really big, heavy guys. And I will play that because it leads into X guard and other things. But for me, even with the omoplata, those things are all sweeping positions for me. I'm not going to try to finish an omoplata on the big guy. I'm going to try to sweep with them. That John Wayne is a sweep position. X guard, single leg, XK guard, those are all sweeping positions. That is my focus. So then I get to just win distance on top. As you may have guessed, most bigger guys, especially when we're really thinking in terms of like, oh no, this guy is so much bigger than me. When somebody has 10 or 15 pounds on you, yeah, you can make it as an excuse to why you lost, but it's not something that's usually constantly in your mind. But when somebody has 50 pounds on you, you're focused on that. You know, you really have to pay attention to that. And so for me, it is about get on top and then use, even though I have 50 less pounds than you, use what I have to stay on top of you. That's always my strategy with a bigger guy. With a smaller guy, I am way more likely to play guard because they're more dynamic. They tend to be faster. So I'm happier to play close guard. I'm happier to play spider. I'm happier to play something that ties them up and slows them down. And then for them, it's most likely they're not going to go to their knees. Most likely they're going to stop moving at a point. And again, that's when I attack. I don't like to try to just see who's quicker at, what do they call that? Is it a standoff? Is that what you do when you would take like three paces and then turn around and shoot each other? I don't know, but you know what I'm saying. Dang, what is that word? Who knows? But anyway, I try to not trade with people when they are going to be faster than me, or I assume they're going to be faster than me. I try to tie them up and make them maybe get a little discouraged and stay in place for a second for me to start to do some jiu-jitsu from bottom. I guess my answer is I'm always trying to get on top, but I'm more likely to attack submissions off my back against a smaller guy. But the big thing is for me against a big guy, the only submission that I will tend to attack off my back, unless of course we're in a tournament and I need a submission or something like that. But strategically, the only one I'm looking for is an omoplata. And that is because it kind of keeps their weight off of you. You know, if you triangle a guy who's way bigger than you, most likely you can't even lock your legs. And a lot of times it lets you get your guard passed. Arm bars, they get to put all their weight on you when you go for them off your back. If you can get underneath and start to attack the legs, that's great because you can knock them to their butt and keep their weight off of you. But for me, I just don't, I don't like to do that. I don't think that's the game that I like to play. But if you want to just level up your jiu-jitsu and get better at playing top or understanding what you should be doing from bottom, the best way to do that is to purchase the last two seminars that I taught on chest over. They weren't the last two, but two very long detailed seminars that I taught on chest over chest, one at Watson Martial Arts and the other at Parada Jiu-Jitsu. And it's about 3 hours of content plus a bonus seminar called The Pinch, where we look at what upper body control is. And I think you guys will really like that. And that's only available at simplifyingjiu-jitsu.com. I will make sure to link it in the description of this episode. Also, shout out to Freedom Jiu-Jitsu in Freeport, Florida. I just taught a seminar there. And that was a really fun one. We covered chest over chest, of course, because what else do I even know? But the beauty of that is that seminar really has so many different ways we can go about it. It always starts with chest over chest. Actually, my dad and I taught that, which is for me, my favorite way to teach is me and my dad teaching together, giving those two perspectives. And, we taught that seminar and it went really well, but the questions were so good. And eventually the questions turned into guard retention and into competition and into all kinds of other things. And those seminars are so much fun to teach because they're not the same thing all the time, right? I don't show like, okay, these are the six moves that I teach for a chest over chest seminar. It's always different because I'm always just seeing what the people want, what they understand, what they want to dive deeper on. And I do that in both of the seminars that are available at simplifyingjiujitsu.com too. And so both are pretty much completely different minus the first 5 minute little segment. And I think you will learn a lot. You will gain a lot of perspective on the top player and the bottom player's jobs when looking at guard passing. All right, now let's go to a hard question. This one I really liked. Is how can an athlete cater their training to their own needs without much autonomy? And I Googled autonomy. So I believe this question is about if you don't have it, maybe as much control over your training, and how can you look at getting, I wouldn't even say getting good on your own, because if you don't have much autonomy in your training, most likely that's because you're part of a school. And so there are a few ways that I would look at this. Early on for people, I don't think that this is a huge necessity. I think that your school probably should dictate what you're trying to learn, because you're not good enough to actually decide what you should be learning. Even if even if it's what's interesting to you or whatever, a lot of times you're so wrong early on that you're going to do yourself a disservice by trying to, I don't know, by trying to take too much control over your training. Now, if and the person who asked this question is a black belt. And so I know that that is not the answer. But there are a lot of black belts that maybe travel a lot and have to teach it or have to train at other gyms, or have just, they train at a different place than maybe lines up with their goals. And I think that that is more how we're going to approach this question. And so for me, I really, and people may not like this, but I really think as you get good at jiu-jitsu, most of your training can just be live training. But not live training with the focus of I'm just here to win rounds. I think that most higher level people, most purple, brown, and black belts, classes stop being beneficial. And I know that that sounds so anti what most coaches say, but most coaches, you got to remember, it weakens the mat space when people start doing their training on their own, right? All of our white belts and blue belts stop having people to ask questions to. And so I'm not saying that's the motivation for all these coaches and why they want you to keep training, and want you to keep coming to class. But for me, I haven't went to a class that I haven't taught since I was a purple belt. And it was like, one or two stripe purple belt. And I have gotten so much better at jiu-jitsu because of that. Now, I think you also have to look at your promotions. You also have to look at your relationship with your coach. Some coaches are not going to be cool with this. And so maybe that's not the answer. But I'm going to explain what I mean by this. When I started to learn to create training methods that sat in live training, that tied into my live training, instead of going, well, I don't want to be drilling. I don't want to be drilling knee shield. I don't ever play knee shield. It doesn't fit my game. It doesn't fit my body. And just feel like that whole month that we focused on knee shield as a team was a wash. I kind of looked at it like this. I would go, okay, I'm focused on knee cut. So even when we are drilling knee shield, I'm thinking in terms of knee cut, but I stopped going to classes that made me drill knee shield a bunch. I would still positional spar. I think that's very important for every position. But even when we were positional sparring something that I wasn't focused on, my focus was how do I get to my knee cut? We're positional sparring knee shield. I'll just get to my knee cut, right? We're live training. How many times in this round can I do a knee cut on this person, right? As you get better, you should be able to beat people a lot easier in your training. And so I always talk about designated winner. And I always talk about, it's like, okay, we're going to positional spar. We choose one person to win every single round. They get to win it in the way that fits them, the way that they can feel that the move is working, or whatever jiu-jitsu they're trying to do is working. They don't have to repetitively hit the same move. They just repetitively pass the guard, right? The bottom person gives 20% resistance, maybe 40% resistance. And I always give this example, and people will say things like, hey, we do something like designated winner at my gym, or maybe even the exact same thing at my gym. How did that happen? And so, well, one, for me, designated winner came from noticing what I was liking to do, but then noticing what all kinds of other coaches that I knew that were very good coaches liked to do. And so then what would happen with designated winners, I would go, okay, well, why do all these coaches stumble upon this training method, but none of us are talking about it? None of us are sharing it with other people. And here was the answer that I concluded. When you start to get very good at jiu-jitsu, every round becomes designated winner. Every live round, right? I get to say, okay, I'm going to give you 20%, but you suck and I'm really good. And so I am going to be the designated winner every single time with 20% effort. You start to remove your own physicality out of your training, and your opponent can be your the white belt you're going with can be going really hard, or the blue belt can be going really hard, but they still don't stand a chance. And then what I started to realize was, like, this is just in my regular live training. And this is where the first training method we ever had on the show, called the end goal method, it's episodes 1 and episodes 99. This is where this came from. I needed to get good at specific things, but I didn't have as much control over my training. And so what I would do is I would just say, and honestly, the reason I didn't have control over my training was not because I trained somewhere else. It was because I was a coach and I needed people to be more well-rounded, and we couldn't just be working what I wanted to be working all the time. And so I would force my the place that I wanted to be from and just repetitively hit my knee cut, repetitively hit my guard passes on people, even though we were doing a live round, and I would let them fight out of side control, and I would give them a little energy to fight out of side control and then go right back to my pass. And for them, they were getting way better at defending side control. They were getting way better at guard retention. But for me, I was learning to pass more and more effortlessly. And so I would say, if you are, you know, that's a really long answer and I haven't even given any answer yet. But if you are somebody that is higher level, that is struggling to take control of their training, I really think that, one, I don't think it's wrong to stop going to class. Sometimes you just, it stops being important. It stops being as relevant. I remember I got this idea from a high level black belt that just said, yeah, by the time you get to purple or brown belt, for a lot of people, class stops being as effective. It stops being as important. Not for everybody. Some people love class, and that is their favorite way to get better at jiu-jitsu. But a lot of people, they start to get interested in other things. They start to want to dive deeper into things than you're really diving into them into class, or than you're diving in your classes. And so my advice to that would be, focus on open mats, focus on times you can actually get live rolling, and then take that other time of class and study. Watch jiu-jitsu tape on what you want to be focused on what you want to be getting good at, instead of, you know, like, there is this problem that we all have, that we don't think that we have choice. And this is not just in jiu-jitsu training. This is just in life in general. We so often get stuck in this cycle of life and say, this is how life has to be. And of course, there's going to be trade-offs to the choice that we make. Maybe your coach is going to not be happy that you're not doing that type of training, that you're not in class every single time. Maybe it's going to diminish how quickly you get promoted. But if you really care more about your skill development than anything else, I really think that your answer should be to focus on your skill development. It should be, okay, well, what skills could I be getting better at? That's what I need to focus on. And instead of, you know, hey, I have to go to class, you know, because if I don't go to class, this happens or that happens. And then you can also always be honest and communicate with your coaches and say, hey, I don't seem to be getting better from this. I do need a little more control over my training. I do need a little more time to do this, but time to focus on what I want to focus on. But to me, that focus can be done mostly in live training, with you controlling your effort and rolling with people that you're better than. Because you control your effort more, you can say, well, I am focused on 50-50 guard. If you're a black belt and you're rolling with white and blue belts, you are going to be able to put them in 50-50 guard no matter what they're really giving you. And you're going to be able to play that position more. You're going to be able to get better at that position more. And what you'll also do is you'll create white and blue belts that now have interest in that position. And you can talk to them about it. You can problem solve from it. And you can even drill stuff from it. But for me, that is kind of, I think this, it's how high level guys, they start to change how they get their reps. You see so many schools that have really high level guys, and they use their drilling almost more for cardio than anything. you know, they don't all hit these same passes that everybody's drilling, but these passes that they drill, they do a lot of movement from, and, you know, it's a lot of offense and it lets them push their cardio. But then everybody else has kind of their own specific games and they develop those games in live training. And so, you know, I'm kind of giving a bunch of answers, but maybe the answer with why you're struggling to get better is, or to cater your training to your own needs is just that you're stuck in class and you're, you know, like, I don't think that that's the answer. I don't think that wasting 15, 20 minutes doing the same drills that don't help you, and then maybe don't even necessarily translate to your jiu-jitsu, I don't think that that's the answer. I think that a lot of times the answer is get more reps doing what you want to be good at. And when you're good at jiu-jitsu, you have so much control of the round, you can get those reps in live training. And so that's kind of my answer. On that note, I liked this question. What's your hottest this move doesn't work take? And so you guys know this if you've listened to the show for any period of time. The shrimping that is done up and down the mats does not exist in real jiu-jitsu. You do not see that happen. And this is one of the most offensive things that I could say to anybody. So let me just hit a really quick sip of the coffee. And we will get into why shrimping doesn't exist, the shrimping that is done up and down the mats. Yes, you can shrimp to escape mount, right? There is a movement that escapes mount that traps the leg between your two legs. But it is not the same movement that you do when you are pretending you're taking both hands and pushing on an upper thigh and scooting your hips out from under somebody. It is not the same movement. Why is that? Because when we are escaping mount and when we are escaping side control, the fight is not you scooting your hips out from underneath the person. The fight is you being able to get on your side. Okay. And when we are shrimping up and down the mat, there is no resistance on you getting up and getting on your side, right? If I flatten you from mount and I simply pinch your hips with my knees and keep my weight on top of you, you could have done millions of reps of shrimping up and down the mat. And what you'll notice is that it doesn't matter. You don't escape. Now you're like, you know, here's a perfect example. How many people that listen to this show still at your gym do you shrimp up and down the mats? And do you do it for 10 minutes every single class? And so theoretically, you have done more reps than any of us that don't do this, right? Or are you and everybody at your gym unmountable? Is it impossible to hold you guys in side control? No, it isn't, because it does not directly correlate. They, you know, yes, they look similar, but this is something that came from when jiu-jitsu was a lot of private lessons, when jiu-jitsu was very early in its infancy, and you were also trying to get people to get a workout in to their jiu-jitsu. Like, oh, we're going to do these warm-ups, you know, we're going to do all these things, and then you're going to be sore, and so you're going to know that jiu-jitsu was a workout. The problem is, it is such an inefficient use of time. So when we were just talking about, you know, like there comes this point where class stops being as useful for you, it's just because it is not a great use of your time. Now, that doesn't mean don't go to class and just cut that time out. No, then that's an even worse use of your time. The best use of your time would be to take that time and to get better at jiu-jitsu in that time. If you are, you know, if your coach is working, teaching something that you don't understand, that is something you can always focus on. You can always get better at understanding something like that. But if your coach is making you repetitively do something and it is not increasing your understanding, and then even worse, it's not even real reps, then that's a waste of your time. That's a waste of everybody's time on the mat. And so, I always talk about the closed guard armbar being the same thing. A lot of people warm up with closed guard armbars, but the armbars themselves are awful. And this is not to say that there isn't a closed guard armbar. There is, but so few people do it. So few people actually have a good closed guard armbar. So few people know how to occupy the armpit space to be able to, create that angle to use their leg to jam into the armpit space so a guy can't just pull his elbow to his body, right? And then hit the armbar. And when you are just with all kinds of space, just throwing your legs over the person's head while they gently put their arms in for you, that doesn't translate. That is not going to make you better at the closed guard armbar. Again, if this is something you warm up with, how many guys actually are hitting closed guard armbars at your gym? Most likely it's like, oh, maybe one guy. There's maybe one guy but he doesn't do it anything like we drill it. He doesn't just like throw his legs like a maniac super wide and create a ton of space from closed guard. You're using your legs to control somebody. You don't want a ton of space in closed guard. Those things that just things that people do as warmups to waste time to me that you could replace with 10 minutes of teaching, 10 minutes of understanding, 10 minutes of positional sparring, 10 minutes of literally anything that is actually jiu-jitsu. And I think it would, you would be that much more efficient. You would be that much better. If you train 3 days a week, it would literally be 30 minutes of extra training for you if you guys skipped those warm-ups and did something else. But Josh, you're saying don't warm up? No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying almost every gym starts with some teaching anyway, and then you drill the moves lightly anyway, and that is a much more effective warm-up anyway. You're actually doing jiu-jitsu, but you're not doing it at a live pace. You're doing it a lot easier. You should definitely warm up your body. But to act like that these moves that kind of look like jiu-jitsu, but you don't actually take them onto the mat and apply them, to act like they are they're effective at all, is just not true. And so, that is my hot take on a move that I don't think works. I don't know about any other ones. I think that, I think that there's all kinds of, every time I've heard of a move not working, eventually somebody figures out how to do it well. And then it kind of works. It's like the same with the closed guard armbar. The closed guard armbar didn't work until some guys at high level actually got good. Mount didn't work until a few guys started to really play with it and really understand it. And now everybody understands mount. Everybody loves mount. And I know for you guys that are newer to jiu-jitsu, you're like, what do you mean mount didn't work? I'm not joking. People did not play mount when I started jiu-jitsu. There were guys that did MMA and, when you could strike, people understood that mount worked, right? But when you couldn't strike, guys were so getting bridge and rolled so easily that everybody I would talk to would be like, yeah, I don't play mount. I only think about side control. And now everybody wants to be in mount. The ideal scenario is you pass straight to mount so you don't have to be in side control where guys' hips are free and they have that chance to escape. Let's see. I think we have three questions left. And two of them are on gym ownership. So I like these. Any common mistakes or pitfalls you see within new gyms or new gym owners, and how can you avoid them? So new gyms and new gym owners. I would say yes. I would say the first and the simplest thing that happens, and this happens constantly, is people don't take the risk. They have this desire to be a jiu-jitsu coach. They want to do it so badly, but they don't put any real investment in themselves. I'm not saying that means you have a desire to go be a jiu-jitsu coach, go quit your job and be a jiu-jitsu coach. That's not smart either. But they really don't take any steps towards it. And so what I mean by that is most people that I interview on the show that run jiu-jitsu schools, most of them started their jiu-jitsu school and they were teaching somewhere else. They were like, you know, they were running a program at a local YMCA, or they were running a program at an MMA school or a fitness program or a CrossFit studio. And they were running this program, and then they built it up enough that they could eventually start a school. For me, we had our place, we called it the Jiu-Jitsu Garage, and it was Head Nod HQ before there was a Head Nod HQ. And there were six, eight of us that just trained jiu-jitsu together. And that was kind of my start. I was just talking, we have an episode, it won't be out for a while. It's just talking to Matt Kwan from the Essential Jiu-Jitsu podcast. And he was saying, yeah, I came up, you know, and I was teaching at this school, and then eventually started my own school. That story is so common. And so if we were to reverse engineer what most coaches, what they need is they need to learn how to coach. They need to get reps actually being a coach. And so how you do that is you find a place to get reps being a coach. You can't just say, oh, well, I want to be a coach one day, and then not actually do the things, you know, not actually get reps of things that will teach you to be a coach. And then on top of that, the same with business ownership. You need to learn what goes into running a jiu-jitsu school. And I have one more pitfall that we'll talk about. One big thing that nobody seems to learn when it comes to running a jiu-jitsu school, but you need to learn what it takes to do that. And one of the best ways to do that is if you train at a place that lets you, you ask your coach. You say, hey, I want to be a school owner one day. Could I teach kids classes at first? Could I teach adult classes? Could I teach this? Could I do this? Could I just learn how to sign people up at the gym? And can I do this? And then eventually one day have your blessing to go off and start my own school. If you were to do that, most coaches would say yes, but there is this lack of communication. Most of the time it's like, well, I want to teach and I know my coach doesn't want me to do it. Or sometimes coaches don't want you to go teach. And so, you know, that is different. But I would say a lot of places, if you were to ask your coach and to think win-win, how does this help my coach, me starting a school? Well, if I am teaching some classes and taking some of the stress off of him, I'm learning how to teach. And he's getting somebody who is working for membership or working for, you know, whatever, $20 a class, whatever jiu-jitsu, whatever payment there is on that. And you're both winning in that scenario, right? And so then eventually you're able to kind of go off and start your own school. But so few people actually will take any step towards running owning a school. They just tell you that they want to own a jiu-jitsu school, and then they say it forever and then they never do it. And so that would be the first thing, is like, get your feet wet. I have some guys now in my on my team that are starting to go spread the Head Nod gospel, the Head Nod way, and they're getting to teach at some different places. I'll interview you know, haven't recorded it yet, but I'll interview one of my newest black belt, Robert Arias, and he's teaching at a fitness studio right now, and the program's starting to grow. And even if that program isn't huge off the bat, one, he's building a base of students. And he's also learning what it takes to coach and what it takes to run a gym and what it takes to run the business side of the gym. Now, the second pitfall is for people that don't understand this. Running a jiu-jitsu school, if you want it to be successful, you have to understand marketing. It is, unless you start your school in a unbelievably high traffic, high income area, you have to have a good grasp of marketing. But even starting a school in a high traffic, high income area, that is an understanding of marketing, right? You're in front of enough eyes of people that can afford to do jiu-jitsu that will grow your jiu-jitsu school. But I've told this story many times on the show. When I started my school, we ran it for 3 years and we were at like 54 students at the end of 3 years. And I was getting frustrated because that was, you know, it was enough to pay me a little, but it wasn't very much. And it was enough to pay for all of our bills. It wasn't costing me money to teach jiu-jitsu, but it still wasn't paying very much. And so what I ended up doing was I ended up purchasing a kind of like a how to run a jiu-jitsu school, how to run marketing from a guy, Matt Arroyo. He's been popping on Instagram a bunch lately. He always posts videos with Dave Batista. That's one of his brown belts. And so you see, I would see this and it was really different. The stuff that he was explaining to me, it was about how to Facebook market and how to kind of create an easy way for people to sign up once they market. I did a private call with him. And the first thing he did was like, hey, where's your website? What's your website? And I told him, and he's like, hey, your website sucks. You've got to change this. You've got to change this. You've got to make it easier for people to sign up for a free class. And when I did that, we went, and I had set this goal, but we went from 54 students on January 1st to June 1st, 6 months later, we had 100 students and we were starting to look for a new location. And then eventually later that year, I ended up being able to go full-time teaching jiu-jitsu. That didn't come from me having an amazing curriculum. I was already a great jiu-jitsu coach then. I already had a lot of really tough guys. I already had a really cool environment. But here was the problem. I didn't know how to spread that word. It was marketing that allowed me to move to a bigger facility. It was marketing that allowed me to train my, to quit my job. And so when you can plan on having the coolest curriculum and having the coolest name and having the coolest, all these other things. But if you do not know how to spread the word, get people into the door, I don't even think that sales are a huge part of running a jiu-jitsu school. Jiu-jitsu is this amazing product that can actually sell itself. But having a system of bringing people in and then a simple way for them to sign up, most people will be sold by just doing jiu-jitsu, but you have to get them to try it. And so those two things, I think, are just monstrous pitfalls that so many people have in jiu-jitsu. Let's see. Then there was another one. Okay, perfect. This is also on the same thing. What steps should a purple belt take to start developing their own plan for a future gym to own? No doubt, same thing. You should figure out ways to practice what you are going to need to do in the jiu-jitsu space, right? And it's not just like a, you know, hey, coach, teach me, right? It doesn't benefit your coach that much. Hey, coach, what can I do for you to get me to this level? What can I do for you? What can I do for the team to help me get to this level? I've had so many guys that I've had coach at our gym that have gotten their reps coaching and are now, in my opinion, really, really good coaches that could run their own places. And but you can only do that, you know, if it is a win-win. It's just not going to be most coaches are not going to bite on that unless it is a win-win. And so I think the steps you take is you get reps coaching jiu-jitsu. And then you get reps learning to market. See if you can run the team's Instagram page. See if you can maybe the marketing isn't going to be jiu-jitsu marketing. Maybe whatever job, maybe you are, you know, maybe you don't require a ton of money. And so your job is pretty minimum wage in general. Maybe you put your focus on finding a job that is somewhere in marketing. Maybe you create some type of side hustle that is somewhere in marketing. I promise you, that is what jiu-jitsu school ownership is. It is not, oh, well, we're going to have a bunch of, you know, we're going to have a bunch of gear and everyone's just going to buy the gear. And then people are going to see the phone number on the back of the gear and they're going to be like, oh yeah, I'll just sign up. It's not how it works. You need a very simple, you just think about like how many things there are right now that are trying to get your attention just for 1 minute. How many ads are on your Instagram that are just trying to get your attention for 1 minute? And you see this everywhere. And a jiu-jitsu school is doing the same thing. We're competing. We're not just like people think, oh, there's another jiu-jitsu school in my town. Oh, no. You're thinking way too small-minded if you look at that, if you look at it that way. When we are jiu-jitsu coaches, we're not competing with other jiu-jitsu schools. Maybe if they're next door, we are. But really, we're competing with rock climbing, CrossFit, any type of fitness. We're competing with movie theaters. We're competing with malls. We're competing with anything else that takes people's time. So you've got to learn how to capture their time for a little second and take that second and turn it into them walking through the door. Because if you have a good environment, if you did focus on all those other things, if you know how to coach jiu-jitsu, jiu-jitsu will sell itself. But you need to learn to market. And so if you're a purple belt, you're looking to get those steps in now, learn to market, learn to coach. Those are the two biggest things. And then back to the pitfalls thing, I should have mentioned this. Low rent is the biggest thing. That is the biggest pitfall. People will try to start with a huge school and then they've got to get their first 50 students immediately so they're not losing money. And those first 50 students are going to be the hardest to get. And so, you want to make sure that if you can, you start a jiu-jitsu school that is at break even. That's something I will say that we did. I was saying it was, you know, we didn't understand marketing, but something we did really well was we had such a low overhead place that we at Head Nod HQ have never lost money any month. We've been around for, I don't know. I want to say 8 years. I think we just celebrated 8 years, but we've been around for 8 years and we not one month have ever lost money. And so, you know, that is due to having low overhead. Don't bite off more than you can chew. Just like I'm talking about developing skills before you start your school, you're going to have to develop a lot of skills as a coach once you start your school, and giving yourself time, not having yourself in this pressure cooker where it's like, oh, dude, if you don't sign up 10 people this month, you're going to lose your gym. Not a good place to be at. Those are my thoughts. Let's look at the last final question. And this is, to me, the hardest question. And we're on our last question. Our last question is, man, this is a tough one. I don't know how I can answer this. What makes a great mentor? I struggle. A lot of times I can answer these questions because I can deconstruct myself, right? And this is tough though, because I don't feel like in any way I'm a great mentor to anybody. I've been thinking about this one for a few days since this one's been asked, and I have a few notes, and we'll just kind of look at this. And like I said, this is just my perspective. This is what I'm thinking if I am looking for a mentor, because I have had great mentors, people that have really helped me. And I really think a first thing is expertise, right? I think that like when I'm looking at a great mentor, I think I'm contrasting it to a great coach. I don't think that you have to be an expert to be a great coach. A lot of times coach's job is implementation, right? And so your coach is just helping you. We talk about this all the time. Your coach is helping you get where you want to go. And yes, a mentor does that too, but a mentor, I feel like, does it in a different way. Your coach is there week in and week out to help you. Okay, well, these are the steps that we can make to get you to that goal. A great mentor kind of gives you that goal, and I think gives you that inspiration. But the way that they do it is with expertise. I don't think that I would try to get a mentor that has not done what I'm trying to do that has not or doesn't have just some level of understanding that I do not have at all. And great mentors are something that any high-level person, not just in jiu-jitsu, but out of it, any high-level person has. And it's not always that they paid for a mentorship, right? It's not always that. A lot of times you just, there's this interview with Tim Ferriss and Jim Collins. Jim Collins wrote Good to Great. He wrote a bunch of other really great books, but that's what I always think of him from, is Good to Great. And he has this term. He calls it who luck. And who luck is you getting to, it is just the luck that is, that comes from you getting to meet somebody, the luck that comes from you getting to run into somebody and just create a relationship that maybe you shouldn't have gotten to create. And in that, that is how he talks about his mentor, Peter Drucker. And something that I think was really cool is like he gets to, you know, Peter Drucker was basically the Jim Collins of the last generation. And he got to learn so much from Peter Drucker, but almost in every phase of life, like the phase of life that he is in now, when he's doing this interview, he gets to talk about, yeah, at this time when I actually met Peter and he had already accomplished all these great things, these are the questions that I was asking him. And he's like, and now I'm that age. And so there is this level of like, they have done what you are trying to do, or at least they deeply, deeply understand what you are trying to do. But like the biggest difference for me, the biggest value of a great mentor is you being able to ask a question to them, something important, something that you have been pondering, something that you have been thinking about constantly, maybe for years, and you ask them, and they can answer your questions simply. And a lot of times, they can communicate so effectively that they make you feel stupid. You go, wow, I've never thought of it that way. And that is like this special perspective, to me, is what makes a great mentor. And like for me, I think that I do mentor a lot of my students, some of my students, but I don't think I even mentor all of them. I think I coach all of them. But I think it's like very few people. You need this level of communication. And I almost don't know if it's all just about the mentor, but it's like the right mentee? I think it is. I think it's mentee. We're going to go with it. With the right mentor. Having those two, you need this level of communication, this level of understanding. It's like I always explain why I don't teach jiu-jitsu with the scientific terms that people have really been making popular now. And that's because like I teach jiu-jitsu in Granite City, Illinois. I would say on average, not a lot of my students, including myself, graduated college. I didn't even go to college. And so to try to act like the best language for us to use with each other is scientific, that's just us trying to sound smart, in my opinion. I think the best language for us to use with each other is a language that we all understand. And that's something that I look at with a mentor, is that they have this expertise, they have this understanding, but then they have a language that works with you and they can communicate this understanding so simply. And I wrote one more thing. I don't remember what my third note was. Oh, and the third thing is, I think a great mentor inspires you. A great mentor. And again, this is not to say that your coach cannot be your mentor. These can be the same thing. Your dad can be your mentor. That's somebody I always look to as my biggest mentor. I also look to my coach. I look to Kyle. But I look at like with Kyle, Something I've always looked at as a competitor is Kyle was also from some small town in Illinois, and he made it to the UFC. He was a semifinalist on The Ultimate Fighter. He accomplished these big goals that I would love to accomplish. You know, obviously I'm not a fighter at all, but just made it to the highest level, and also is this phenomenal coach and has a very large school. And these are things that he has accomplished, that he has expertise in, that I have yet to accomplish. And so for me, it's like, yes, this person not only can give me that information, not only do Kyle and I speak the same language, but then there's this level of inspiration. There is this level of, man, he did do all that, didn't he? That's impressive. I bet I could do that too. How couldn't I? I have somebody that helps me. I have somebody that has been there doing it too. And so those are kind of the three things that I look at with a great mentor, or I would look for in a great mentor, is, you know, somebody who inspires you, somebody that is an expert in whatever you are trying to be mentored in, and then somebody who can actually talk to you, that can actually speak to you. And I think that there also has to be a little more level of respect with a mentor. I think that there has to be this level of trust from the mentee to say, hey, this is okay, this is the this is the important thing that I want to accomplish. I'm trusting that this guy just knows more than me, even though it doesn't maybe make perfect sense yet. I am trusting that these steps that I'm going to take are going to work out for me. And so that's where I'll leave you guys today, is what makes a great mentor. I struggled through that one, fumbled through that question. But yeah, that's all I have for you guys today. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Hope you guys have been enjoying these Q&A episodes, especially as I've been traveling a little bit and been in different rooms every single time and not able to really do as many of my standard I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show studio questions and being in the studio. I think I'll be back for the next Q&A. If you guys have any questions, you can always ask on my Instagram, send me a message, or you can send me an email, josh@simplifyingjiujitsu.com. And I think that is going to be the last time that I ask you guys to send me an email or to ask me through Instagram. I'm pretty sure that the next time I do a Q&A, which will be 2 weeks from now, will be will just be a link that you can click and ask anything, which is super exciting. Then on top of that, next week, we have another episode coming out, and it is with one of my black belts, Eric Huebner. He's been on the show twice, and he's been on the show twice, and a lot of people still tell me to this day it's their favorite episode. And this is, without a doubt to me, the best episode that Eric and I have ever done together. I don't even know. I honestly, if I'm being totally honest with you guys, I don't think it's close. And it's on mindset. It's on mental toughness. Anybody who is a big David Goggins fan, you know, and likes that mentality, Eric's my David Goggins because he can fight, you know? And so, you know, he is one of the most mentally tough people that I know. And we get to dig deep on what that is like. We get to dig deep on performance and on mindset. I'm telling you guys, we won't have a Tuesday episode. It'll just our only episode next week will be on Thursday. But I am telling you guys, this episode is going to be a banger. And it also flows right from last Tuesday's episode where I interviewed Sal Woods and George Kurgan. Episode's already out. A lot of people have messaged me and told me that that is their favorite episode ever. I think people love that, taking the wrestling mentality and taking wrestling and trying to apply it to jiu-jitsu. Eric and I even dig in on that specific interview a little bit and kind of go back and forth on that. But either way, if you wrestled before too, you should listen to both of those episodes. But even if you didn't, if you compete in jiu-jitsu, or if you just absolutely love jiu-jitsu and love the idea of grappling and how it can all be the same, and it doesn't have to just be you know, hey, jujitsu is only jujitsu and it can't be mixed with anything else. I think you're going to love that episode. I know I did. I love both of those episodes. But that's all I have for you guys today. Be sure to ask questions. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday. You will not want to miss it. And I hope today's episode helped you. Hope you enjoyed the Q&A portion that we had today. Hope you find a great mentor. And I hope that today's episode helps you guys suck just a little bit less at jujitsu. Have a great day, guys.